begin with, it's already a peculiarly postmodern medium. And by that, I mean it's really viewer-centric, and it's always going to engage the viewer in some way or another. Having the power in those days just to turn the knob off, I don't know if anybody remembers knobs these days, maybe they do, having that power to turn the knob off was always, you know, a huge thing, or change the channel, and you would click, you know, the channels over. So there was an actual embodied engagement with the television as a piece of equipment. And steadily over time, of course, television itself has become more interactive. The advent of on-demand services, the advent of digital television, and now, of course, the advent of interactive television with social media as a kind of multi-sided TV experience, if you will. So we're not just able to watch, we consume and we share in ways that we probably always have done, but in ways now that are so much more immediate and so much more direct and so much more visual and so much more passionate, I guess, because it really does touch you on a much more personal level. I mean, I watch television pretty much on my phone a lot of the time, to be honest. And, you know, I see everybody watching it on their iPads and public transport. I see students in my lectures watching it when they should be, you know. It happens all the time. But the way that we interact with it is quite personal. And I wonder whether we're actually interacting with TV in the same way that we did in the 50s and 60s. We used to gather around like the new kind of visual fireplace that it was, and really share that experience in watching stuff. And I guess we still do that. But I think for most of us, it's quite a selfish experience and a personal experience. But that then kind of gives us the right to speak back online, you know, to shout out loud and proud across various social media platforms, our feelings about different types of TV.
Of course.
I think what's also interesting now about audience participation is also the interactivity that digital media affords us, you know, that kind of digital participation. And we see it with the kind of the memes that come out of different TV shows, or that the way different clips are reworked by fans, or even the way fans get in and kind of create their own edits of TV shows and films and put them online. So we're not just engaging with the stories and shouting out what we want from the different stories across social media platforms. We're also actually physically engaging with the content in a way that shapes the content. And I think that's what's really new, and that's what's really different. The accessibility on one hand, but the ability to engage technologically and directly. And for most of us, I think time is probably also an issue. I mean, a lot of people, for example, in Australia last week, they were watching the Eurovision at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, because having that immediacy is incredibly important. I have friends that watch RuPaul's Drag Race. They want it the same time as the US, you know. So having that immediacy and that fast kind of connection to TV globally is something that's really changed the way audiences engage.
Absolutely. There's been this kind of like shift, I guess, with technology now, that you can really watch it at the same time as everybody and kind of share that experience, not just with people in the same room as you or in a cool club that you're in, but literally with the entire world.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the constant kind of conversations that happen almost as a part of the television screen now. You know, very often you'll see, particularly hardcore fans of shows like Game of Thrones, you know, tweeting absolutely as they go along and watch it, you know, and virtually narrating the scene from their own perspective and engaging with other people and debating as the actual TV program's unfolding. I mean, this, of course, I couldn't imagine that, you know, the inventors of television in the 1930s and 40s would have ever envisaged this level of engagement with TV content.
Yeah, of course. I mean, like, you know, it's quite, I wouldn't say out of the ordinary, but definitely just like an interesting, I guess, experience. Now, with large audience engagement in a big TV series like Game of Thrones, do you think some television series have kind of transcended just being entertainment and have become more, I guess, a cultural phenomenon?
Yeah, I wondered about that too. I mean, Game of Thrones obviously has gathered a lot of attention globally, and I've been asked to comment, you know, on this phenomenon a few times. But I kind of feel that with television generally and with larger kinds of cultural stories, they become phenomenon in their own way. I mean, two examples that I often give in lectures is like Jesus and Buddha, right? What did they do before social media? You know, these are big names, right? They somehow seem to get the word out. So people, you know, when prompted and in a given context, will engage en masse in something. And regardless of the ways and the channels that we use to engage with it, it will, you know, gain force and momentum over time, and historically even become stronger. So I think with Game of Thrones, the very interesting aspect of it is that it taps into a lot of universal storytelling techniques that we've always loved and that we've always used, and that have actually transgressed cultures. And we see that with a lot of different film franchises, of course, you know, all of the kind of multiverse DC, Marvel-verse stuff that we see now, that it gets translated into every language across the globe, and that also has its own, you know, cults of fans that may get different things out of it but still share it. So these things become phenomenon, as you say, and they do live beyond the notion of TV itself, because they're dramatising stories that can so easily fit into the politics of the time, you know, and they can also be pushing boundaries in terms of what we're used to seeing visually. And I think Game of Thrones and a lot of quality television now, because we are in an era, I think, of quality television, we're seeing really beautiful visuals. And we're also seeing visuals that we've never seen before that are really challenging us. And whilst they're taking us into mythological places to do with dragons and, you know, crazy kinds of wars and bloodshed, they're also taking us back into things that we want to see, the kind of larger stories about good versus evil, about, you know, how people survive and the strength of the human spirit and the good mystery and the good story well told, you know. So the kind of narratology, if you like, that accompanies something like Game of Thrones is always going to become a phenomenon that exceeds itself. People have often asked me now, what next? What next? What's going to happen now? I mean, who knows what's going to happen? But what we know is that this is possible. And because this was possible, the next thing will certainly be possible as well. And it'll be super interesting to see how technology feeds into these age-old myths and storytelling techniques that we already kind of engage in.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, last and final question. It's a bit of a topical one. So we saw a petition signed by over 1.5 million people to rewrite and remake the entire final season of Game of Thrones, as well as petitions in the past to remake, I think, the entire movie of Star Wars The Last Jedi from so-called fans. Now, how much of an impact does this type of audience participation have on creators?
Well, you know, it does affect them, of course. Will it make them revise it and do the whole thing again? Absolutely not. Will it encourage them to make the next thing based on this thing? Absolutely. So in a sense, there is always that conversation. And here's what's interesting about this kind of interactive technology that we have now, and this kind of two-way conversation that we have that's so immediate, is that we do get to speak to content creators and we do get to speak to studios. I've been working with someone who's researching the, I think it's the Zack Snyder cut of the Justice League film. And there's been a whole lot of movements around that, you know, a whole release the Snyder Cut. You know, it's a very interesting movement. Fans are editing their own version of what they think that director would have done with it had his cut been released, you know, this kind of stuff. And then you've got the wars between DC fans and Marvel fans, you know, wanting different things from different movies and wanting certain things changed. I mean, if we look at Endgame, Avengers recently as well, there's similar kinds of fan cultures congregating around those things too. And what it does really is feed the beast, you know, and maybe the next thing will be more subversive. I mean, I can't imagine that Game of Thrones will just stop. You know, there has to be another character story, historical link or vein that gets opened up and used somehow.
It's
and I think that's
big.
What's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, I think it's just too big of a show for it to just...
It won't. It'll just morph and bleed and open up into other areas. And whether they're as successful, I'm not sure whether they will be or they won't be. But it'll basically be, what do we do now to fill in this gap? And I think the exciting thing about it is that it's opened up all these aspects of conversations between audiences and content creators in ways that will really push the development of new technologies and new stories. And even though they might be familiar, they'll hopefully be just as successful or interesting.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Anthony.
You're very welcome.